Good evening and welcome to Town Square. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. As always, our conversations include you, and if you'd like to join us, the phone lines are open. If you're on Oahu, the number to call is 941-3689, and from the neighbor islands, or if you're listening to the live stream anywhere else, 877-941-3689. Marriage has been evolving from the state to which everyone was supposed to aspire to last year's stunning research showing the marriage rate had plummeted to 31. That means 31 marriages per 1,000 unmarried women. It's the lowest rate in a century, and women who do marry do it for the first time at the oldest level ever at about age 27. Last week, there was another stunner. 21% of married women with better education had spouses less well-educated, was the piece of data we got. It was the first time in the 50 years since all this information has been tracked by the Pew Research Center, and it showed that wives were marrying down the educational ladder. And that's not all. Researchers also found that 39% of newlywed women with a less well-educated spouse out-earned their husbands. Tonight, we're going to look at the changing economics of marriage. Joining us by phone, financial psychologist Brad Klotz. He's the managing partner of Occam Asset Management. He's also associate professor of personal financial planning at Kansas State University and the author of four books on financial psychology, including Mind Over Money, Overcoming the Money Disorders That Threaten Our Financial Health. He's just completed some research with Farnoosh Torabi, who also joins us by phone. She's a personal financial expert, author, speaker, and TV personality. Her work has been featured in the New York Times, The Wall Street Journal, Entrepreneur, Time, and Money magazines. Her latest book, When She Makes More, will be released on May 1st. And in studio with us tonight, Dr. Martin Johnson makes a return visit to the program. He's the founder of the Hawaii Center for Psychology. In 2009, he received the Distinguished Service Award from the Hawaii Psychological Association, and he's soon to officially launch loveinsight.com for women to improve their relationships with life, but it's up there now, and you can see it. And, of course, you're here, too, and again, our numbers, 941-3689 and 877-941-3689. Welcome to everyone. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Farnoosh, I'd like to start with you because I know we only have you for a limited amount of time. And the idea of what happens to a relationship, to a couple, when, as your book title says, she makes more, has a lot of us looking at this saying, is this such a good thing?
Well, I think it's a fantastic thing as a breadwinner in my own relationship. I think the problem is that these relationships can work, and I've evidence of that. But statistically, what we're finding is that while money has always been a potential point of contention in relationships, the plot really thickens when she makes more. And what we're finding statistically is that when she makes more, there are higher risk of divorce, infidelity. The female breadwinner often takes on more housework as it is, sometimes to sort of reclaim her sort of feminine role in the relationship. This is something that has been studied, in fact. And so, and there are issues that are very emotional for the man. He experiences ego deflation. He starts to really question his sense of identity, his sense of self-worth. And for women, too, I think a lot of us who become breadwinners in our relationships, it's not something that we anticipate or prepare for. And I think with a lack of communication between the couple and a lack of understanding and agreement, resentment can easily brew. And so what we find is that while there are a lot of successful couples who have mastered this financial flip where she makes more than him, I think for many, many more couples, this is new territory. We need new rules. Otherwise, we are seeing these complexities challenge these couples to the point of breaking up. And my whole goal is to really educate is first learn how to make these marriages work. I'm a newlywed myself, so I was curious to kind of get the rules figured out, but then really share them with the world and to protect these relationships, because I think this is something to really celebrate at the end of the day and to promote, and we hope that this trend can continue.
When you look at this trend, though, and everything that you've just said, makes it as if we are in a very transitional time, and we're also focusing a lot of who we are and attachment to who we are to how much we make, which has been traditionally what men have done for years. Women, whether they're thrust into a situation where they have to become the breadwinner by happenstance or even by choice, it's still, as you say, new territory. At this point, though, looking at some of the things that have come out of your research, it doesn't look all that happy, Farnoosh. I mean, the idea that, you know, that a woman would be less satisfied with the couple's family planning status and being able to take care of children. Well, we know women have been pulled in that direction for a lot of years now since women were really in the workforce. But in all the areas that you touch, whether it's family or how the family will invest or who is going to be responsible for the budget, all those things, it seems like there is almost more of a downside than an upside. When do we get to have more of the upside?
I think you can start to enjoy the upside when you start to follow the rules in the book. And the very first rule is, or among the very first rules, is rewriting your fairy tale. Particularly for women, I think we grow up with this very, very challenging mantra of having it all, right? It's not something that we tell men to pursue necessarily, but women, we grow up with this aspiration of having it all. And of course, this is something that has been hotly debated. But nevertheless, it's something that we kind of grow up with, this mentality. And I think that when you are a breadwinner and you're bringing home the bacon and you're working hard and then you come home and you still want to be at the forefront of all these other roles as well, and as a mother, as a wife, as a sister, as an individual, and that really does start to weigh on your health and your happiness. And I think so for women and men, what we need to do to be able to enjoy this new status quo is to redefine what it means to be in a relationship, what it means to create balance in your life. The rules as they have been established don't necessarily apply to these types of couples, especially for women, because I think that, you know, while we're making more in our relationships, we're not necessarily making more in the workplace. So there's this whole stress of, you know, being at work and trying to preserve our income while at the same time trying to preserve all of our responsibilities and roles as a mother and as a wife when we come home. And that really does, I think that's where the panic and the stress and the disappointment really does develop. So I encourage women and their couple and their partners to really talk about, you know, what will be our new defined roles in this relationship. What are our strengths? What are our weaknesses? And it's not about looking at what your neighbors are doing or what your parents did or what you think you should do based on what society is telling you. It really has to be something that you develop uniquely within your relationship. You know, why are we in this marriage at the end of the day? Obviously, we were attracted to each other for some reasons, you know, and money, as I say, always seems to thicken the plot when you're married. It seems to stir things up. But it's not an excuse to break up. I think it's something that I think even Brad can speak to, that it's something that we can definitely overcome when there is open communication, when there is a willingness to not be so bogged down by gender stereotypes, to be able to be fluid in the relationship in terms of who does what. And it's not based on because I'm a woman or you're the man. When couples can start to really embrace that, I think then they can start to find more flexibility and happiness in the relationship, if that makes sense.
Well, this is some of the same things that many of our mothers were saying back in the 70s and trying to aspire to in a way that their daughters could see a model that would work. And yet it seemed that many of us fell into the very same issues that our moms were trying to crawl out of. I mean, the roles and the stereotyping and the wanting to be at the forefront of everything, and also feeling pressure and judgment from so many friends and family, no matter kind of what you were doing, whether you were out there in the world making more, making the same, making less, the fact that you were out, you know, having a job at all. all those things seem to suggest that we are really still in that transitional phase of looking at how we want to define the relationships that you just talked about. And certainly some of the statistics that we've been looking at over the last year of how marriage is changing and who is really getting married and how late they're waiting to get married is helping to change all of that. If you had a look in your crystal ball after all the research that you've been doing, some with Brad, would you say that we're moving out of this transitional phase and into something that is more stable and that we won't be talking about these kinds of issues 20 years from now?
That's a really good question. I think in order to be really optimistic about this transition, it's not enough to take on these personal goals and these personal rules that I've mapped out in the book. It's not enough about couples really coming together and figuring out their new roadmap. It also, we're going to need institutions to really participate in order to make this transition a smooth one. In other words, we need society, we need institutions to really be embracing of the new family and the new family construct, and to understand that every family has a need to have work-life balance, men just as much as women, that we need better laws in this country to promote things like paternity leave and maternity leave, and to provide families really with the structures that they need to be able to work efficiently and also be the great parents and providers that they want to be at home. So I think that I do think we're making progress. I mean, look, I think our grandmothers and mothers would be really proud to know that their daughters grew up to be the breadwinners in their relationships. I wish they'd prepared us a little bit more for this responsibility. And so in that way, I think there is some progress to be celebrating. But I think to your point, in order to really feel like we're out of this transition period, it's going to take more than just a micro transformation. It's going to take more than individuals changing their roadmaps. It's going to take really society and institution to participate in the transition, if that makes sense.
Well, and that also says that that's going to be perhaps far more long-term than some of us would like, because those kinds of changes, particularly institutional changes and societal changes, are so slow in coming. But as you look out into the world, are there any particular models that you think in other countries that look good to you? Because some of what you've said a moment ago sound very European in their basis.
Yes, so we definitely did highlight some of the societal advances that we've witnessed in, for example, Sweden and Scandinavian countries. I think that the populations are smaller. There's more wealth to be spread around. So I think they're in a unique situation to be able to implement more progressive laws. Whereas in the United States, obviously, we're a much bigger country. There's a lot of division, and things happen slower here, perhaps. But I think that there are a lot of great European countries that are doing it right in terms of social provisions and institutional provisions for families. And even here in America, we're seeing leadership at companies like Facebook and Yahoo, where there is, relatively speaking, a really good paternity leave for dads, for working dads. And I think that little by little, we are seeing these companies that are in the spotlight take the initiative, and hopefully we'll see other companies learn from that. And right now, it's an exciting time to be a woman, I think, and a man, and married and working, and because I think that this is a topic that is very hot. It's top of mind, and I think that as people look for their next job opportunity, work-life balance is very important to us. The recession is over. People are hiring again, and I think that employees now again have the choice to work somewhere more than they did maybe 5 years ago that's going to provide them with the benefits that they need to have a happier home life. And companies need to really understand that, and I think they are slowly. It's going to be slow, but I think that it's happening. Hopefully we can look back in 20, 30 years and say, we've come a long way.
Well, we promised you that we would only keep you a little way into this program, and we've just about hit that mark. Thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for being here. Farnoosh Torabi. Again, her book is When Women Make More. It comes out on May 1st. Still with us, Dr. Brad Klontz and Dr. Martin Johnson. Thank you both for being here.
Thank you for having us.
Brad, you do a lot of work. I mean, money really is has been your focus. We've had many other conversations on both Town Square and on The Conversation. And some of the research and some of what Farnoosh was talking about a moment ago still tells us that we're still having to look very carefully and very individually at how we feel about money and have to disassociate ourselves from what the rest of the world is telling us. How difficult is that for people right now?
It's really challenging. And as Farnoosh was talking, I was really struck with the fact that society is changing, our reality is changing, and our beliefs really haven't caught up. And I think a lot of it has to do with how we were socialized as children, because a lot of these beliefs we have around money, what a man should do, what a woman should do, these are all taught to us when we're very small, either by watching our parents.
Brad, excuse me, I've got to interrupt you for a second. We're having a really difficult time hearing you. There must be something wrong with the line. We're going to try to get a different line for you in just a moment, and then we'll come right back to you and we'll pick this up. Meanwhile, I've got Dr. Martin Johnson in the studio with me, and you were listening to what Farnoosh was saying, and you see people all the time
sure.
who have difficulty with change of all sorts. And that includes the issue of finances, because that one has been squarely there, right up there with sex, with what most people fight about in a marriage or have difficulty around.
And let me sort of pick up with where Brad was. I'm not sure I know exactly where he was going, but it is true that we learn our roles in marriage and also and how we interact with money from a very early age, and that society is changing very, very rapidly. You know, some of the things Farnoosh was talking about, women are much more educated than men, and that's an increasing trend. I really think we're sort of at the beginning of a transition, not anywhere near the stabilization point. I think it's a healthy transition also. I think it's we got to throw out the rule books. Among other things, you know, pregnancy and childbirth is an ability, not a disability. I'm sort of shocked that, you know, most employers still treat it as a disability and think that's a liberal thing to do. We are in the United States among the last of the industrialized societies when it comes to providing paternity leave and those things. But I think it's important to keep in mind that men are men and women are women. And while there's large, you know, variability within those groups, that there is a difference, and that's not going to change necessarily. That doesn't mean we're limited in role. That doesn't mean the woman can't be the leader or the earner or the leader of the world or whatever. You know, that's not a limitation. It's just that when we're in intimate relationships, when we're in loving relationships, there's going to be these gender differences, and that's not likely to change. That's genetic, that's hormonal. If that evolves over 100,000 years, maybe, but that's not going to change in a decade or so, even as the roles of society, the rules of society and how we deal with money and how what the roles are in a marriage, that does change rather rapidly, relatively speaking, in a generation or two, and that's what we're experiencing.
Well, there are a lot of people that are very glad that women and men are not fungible, you know.
I'm one of them.
But there are things that, because of life circumstance or just your own predisposition to what you are good at, mm-hmm. whether you're a man or a woman, may mean that you take on certain roles and responsibilities. But that's
sure.
an individual couple's
of course.
Decision to make.
Right.
And that's what I hear you saying, what Farnoosh was saying,
yes.
and I think what Brad Klontz was moving toward. And we've got him back.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Oh, that's a much cleaner line. Now we can actually hear what you have to say, Brad. So Martin was picking up a little bit on the thought that we learn from a very early age what it is that the world thinks of us and money and our place in it with whatever money we may have or what money we may hope to have. And that's where we left it with you a little bit too a while ago. You want to pick
right.
up from
and,
that?
And research is, has showing us and is continuing to show us that girls and boys are taught very different things about money.
Still.
For you know, college-age boys, when you're asking them what they were taught around money, their parents were really encouraging them to work and save. And so boys, even still, college-age boys have a stronger desire to earn more and be less financially dependent than women do. So what I'm saying is society has been changing, and that's where the statistics you're talking about, but I think our beliefs are lagging.
So when we see this disconnect between the beliefs that you just talked about and the statistics we mentioned earlier, what accounts for that and how do we make them more consistent?
I think a big part of it has to do with, for the individuals and couples, really start asking yourself, where did you get these assumptions around money? And very often it's from watching parents, how they model their relationship around money, or perhaps it was things that were directly said to you. Like, you know, for example, you don't need to worry about money. That's being said to kids, even today. So I think it's being really conscious of, you know, where you're getting these messages and how they've been impacting your life and how they play out in your relationship, because so many of these messages are unconscious for us. And that's why in the research that Farnoosh and I were doing for her book, we actually surveyed 1,000 women, and about half of them were making more than their committed spouses, husbands, or fiancés, and the other were making, you know, less. And so we were trying to figure out what's different about that. And women who make more, they actually are getting some bad social feedback from their family who are concerned about them. So it's not experienced as something that's normal or good by their extended social system. So there's some pressure actually to try to make less or make as much as their husband or spouse to sort of soothe his ego. And so when you ask people, women who make more, you know, would you like to make less? And they actually say, well, yeah, on average they would like to make less. And I think it's very much related to how much they love their partner, and they're seeing this have a negative impact perhaps on his self-esteem, his self-worth, and there's some social pressure being directed towards women around, you know, well, we're worried, is he taking advantage of you, or there's just something about this that doesn't seem right. So we have all this socialization around what men and women are supposed to do around money, and I think that interferes, probably the biggest factor that interferes in couples who are fighting around money, regardless of who's making more or less.
A couple of things I hear you say, and I want to get Martin Johnson to jump in on this one too, is that we've got a lot of people who are stuck in an old paradigm, who are trying to still enforce their rules on generations now where a wife may be making more than her husband. Also, women feeling kind of, you know, guilty in some ways that they're making more than their husbands, and they don't want to see his ego plummet because of the money factor. And that in all this, as it's being shaped, that we may not have some very healthy ideas about money, period. And that may be the real root of all of this.
Let me try and sort, make a few distinctions and sort some of this out. Because one of the things that I think is rooted in gender, and yes, it's also socialized, but I think it's even deeper than that, is that women tend to, as a primary value, value relatedness and connection, and be more empathic generally than males. And I'm speaking, generally speaking, they're empathic males. I earn my living as a therapist being empathic. But generally speaking, women tend to be more empathic, and so they don't want to hurt their husband's ego, right, in over-earning, and they have all the societal pressure as well. And men tend to be very task and achievement-oriented and more rank-conscious than women, generally speaking. So if it's about the achievement of earning money and the woman out-earns the man, well then, gee, that is sort of deflating to the masculine ego. But it doesn't have to be. So long as the man has a way of contributing to the relationship and to the family that he can feel heroic about. And that can be he keeps a clean house, or he raises the kids well, or he is very artistic and she makes more money. Or it doesn't matter what the accomplishment is. Men are going to be a little more accomplishment-oriented, and women are going to be more relationally oriented at a very deep emotional level. And that's fine. That doesn't mean she can't out-earn him. It just means that in those relationships, money needs to not be the primary accomplishment, or at least not for him. There has to be something that he's accomplishing and contributing that's appreciated. And really, you know, the rule book can get tossed, right? But he's going to need acknowledgement for what he does sort of heroically for the family. And she's going to need to be appreciated for who she is, as well as, you know, her accomplishments are well-earned. But she's going to want, tend to want sort of acknowledgement and appreciation for who she is as a person and how she relates.
And how she not feels. Just as a paycheck.
And not just as a paycheck, right.
If this sounds a little bit familiar to you, we want to hear from you. If you are a husband making a little bit less than your wife, or maybe a lot less than your wife, if your wife making considerably more than your husband, we want to hear from you, too. Our number is 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. We don't mean to peer into your life, but as the paradigm is changing, hearing some of the stories can be helpful in changing that. What is making it a successful relationship for you in your marriage if there's a real disparity of who makes more if the who happens to be you, the wife? We want to hear from you. 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Brad, we've been talking for a long time about the relationship that people have to money, and that equation that somehow has been passed on from, you know, one generation to the next, that you're only as good as how much you've been able to make and how much you can make, is very different from what Martin was just talking about in terms of the value of you as a person, particularly for a woman. As you interviewed those 1,000 or so women that you and Farnoosh used as the basis for her book, When She Makes More, was there a common thread among those women about a sense of guilt that they felt about any of this, or what they did to secretly make themselves feel better with their relationship to the fact that they made more than their husbands?
Well, you know, we didn't actually see a big difference in relationship satisfaction or sexual attraction towards their mate. So women were reporting, you know, just as much love and affection and attraction to their mates, regardless of who made more or who made less. They did have more of that worry, that guilt, that concern about how the situation was impacting their spouse. You know, I think Dr. Johnson made a fabulous point. For most couples, what's happening is paychecks are being, you know, directly deposited into your account. So you're not actually lining up paychecks and measuring them. So it really doesn't have to be that big of an issue. And what studies have shown is that couples who have the most strife around money, and, you know, money's the biggest reason for divorce in couples, it's only in the first 2 years of marriage, though, where that plays out. So if couples can find a way to talk about money, and that's probably the most difficult piece of the puzzle, is having a conversation around money, because we don't see that happen very often in our families. Money is a real taboo topic. It's full of anxiety for many of us and shame for many of us, so we don't really have language to talk about it, and I think that's probably one of the most critical pieces of this, is having that discussion, again, especially in the early years of marriage. I know that when we're together longer, my wife and I, for example, after 12 years, we talk very differently about money than we did in year one or two.
Right, and most couples who have been married a long time, you know, learn to have that part shake out a little bit, too, or at least figure out who's better at what, and then make it okay for that person to handle whatever that thing may be. We're also having some difficulty hearing you again. I don't know what's happening, because you're just over there on Maui. We don't know why this is happening, but we're going to try to get you a better line. And then when you come back, I want to know if any of the women reported that they had to change a little bit how they dealt with their husbands, even if they felt loved. Were women, you know, shopping more or doing some of these other things to make themselves feel good, or not even telling their husbands their true amount? Yes, they might make more than their husbands, but saying, yes, I'm making this much as opposed to that much, or whether they were even discussing, you know, the promotions or any of that kind of thing, too, if that just sort of just took some backseat to all of this.
Yeah, I don't know what Brad's going to say you found, but I think Dr. Klontz makes a very good point that money is difficult to talk about. You know, in psychotherapy, there's an old saying that there's two things that are difficult to talk about, sex and money. And as a psychotherapist, I can tell you that I hear about people's sex lives all the time. I sort of rarely ever hear about their financial stresses unless it becomes very acute. And I think one thing that Dr. Klontz is really to be applauded for is he's really brought that forward, the whole psychology of money and the psychology of finance and financial disorders. After all, money is just a set of behaviors. Sexuality is a set of behaviors. We have lots of science of psychology about sexuality. But really, Brad Klontz has been groundbreaking in his research and in his coverage of financial behaviors. And yeah, that communication is very important. One thing, Beth Ann, I see in relationships a lot is this concept of yours, mine, and ours. And the variability in married couples between how much is yours and mine and how we define that, and then what, if any, is ours, versus, you know what, other couples are like, it's all ours. It's no big deal, right? And I'm not sure there's a right or a wrong about that, but rather there's a negotiation. And one member of the couple may think, well, this is mine. And the other member of the couple goes, no, it's all ours. And, you know, those are the kinds of things that need to get worked out, as Brad points out, early in a relationship, preferably before marriage, right? How are we going to handle this? What do we think of debt, for instance? What do we think of savings? And how do we approach that in our relationship? And how do we do that together? And I would suspect that the research will show that the couples who kind of work that through in the early stages of marriage are much more successful in the long term.
And curiosity about the yours, mine, ours idea, too, depending upon who's making more and how that feeds into how you view what's yours, what's ours, what's belonging to your spouse. Mm-hmm. Going to go now to Stacy, calling us from Maui. And if you'd like to be next, 941-3689 if you're on Oahu, or 877-941-3689. Tonight we're talking about what happens when there's a real disparity financially between what a wife makes and what her husband makes when the wife makes more. So if that describes your situation, whether you're the husband or the wife, we'd like to hear from you. 941-3689. If you have some tips for real success, we'd love to hear those. 941-3689. A lot of research that's come out just in the last week about how that trend is escalating and is continuing to do so. 941-3689. If you'd like to tell us your part of that trend. Stacy, thanks very much for calling us from Maui.
No problem. I fit into the wife who makes more, and I've been married for about 10 years and with my partner for 15, and our financial situation has changed quite a bit over the years. When we first met, we were both broke. I was waitressing, I was in school, my husband was a surf bum when I first met him, and then didn't get a real job, but then I ended up going to medical school, and my husband supported us through medical school, so then there was a time where he was making more money, and now he has an excellent job and makes a great income, but because of my profession, I do significantly out-earn him. And it really, at least in our relationship, and I have quite a feminist husband, it has not caused any kind of conflict within our relationship, but the fact that I make more money currently, or it wasn't a problem when he made more money.
In all the years, and so it sort of you went from the days when you were both broke to now making a considerable amount, although you do make more. How do you negotiate these conversations around money? Now that you've been with each other for 15 years, you've presumably gotten it pretty well, you know, down pat.
Yeah, you know, when we were both pretty broke, we kind of managed our own money and kept things pretty separate. And I think, you know, when he was making more money and kind of supporting us, he managed the finances. And I actually at times never even knew what was going on. And again, I was working quite a bit in school and stuff. And now, actually, since I make more money, I've decided to take over the finances and paying the bills and making sure I know, you know, what's what. And I don't even know if it was ever an open conversation like that, you know, you're going to do this or you're going to do that. It kind of just naturally progressed that way, depending on who was more financially viable, I guess. But,
well, lucky you, and we're glad you've done it and done it well. And are an example to other people who are trying to figure it all out. Thanks for calling very much, Stacey.
No problem.
And we've got Dr. Klontz back. Brad Klontz, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
I apologize. I'm sure it's the quiet chickens.
Well, I tell you, we've got Marina calling us from Maui. We'll see how that line goes. Aloha, Marina.
Hi, this is Marina. Can you hear me?
We can.
Hi. So my comment is, having been in a marriage for nearly 20 years and recently just got out of it, there's one sort of basic thing about women, and I hate to be stereotypical here, but women generally stay in a relationship because of security. And as a result, they may overstay a relationship as well. And my feeling, honestly, is maybe marriage isn't the way to go, and maybe keeping your finances separate is the way to go, because then you choose to be in a relationship. You don't stay in it because you have to be in a relationship.
All right, Marina, you bring up some very interesting questions about the whole yours, mine, and ours idea that we began to talk about with Brad Klontz before the line went a little bit wonky. But also, there are some other issues that are all wrapped up into that, Brad, too, when she's talking about, well, maybe, you know, you got to keep the finances separate. We get tax breaks for people who are married that people who aren't don't get.
That's absolutely correct. And so there are some advantages there. And also, it really comes down to, Marina made a couple great points. The one thing I do want to say is that in research on domestic violence relationships, she's right on. The number one reason that women will return to an abuser is because of financial insecurity. And not just worry about it, but how am I going to feed my children? I mean, a real anxiety and a very realistic one. So that's definitely true in domestic violence relationships. I have seen it done many different ways, whether you're married or not, around how you approach money in terms of the yours, mine, and ours. And for me, it's less about whose name is on the bank account, and it's more about the philosophy of the coupleship and who's feeling empowered, and do you feel like you have a choice? Do you feel like you're making decisions jointly and together, or are you feeling like somebody is taking advantage or somebody is being dishonest about spending? So I think in relationships where both people feel they have power, they feel like their voice is going to be heard, they feel like they can make decisions and they can have input into their partner's decisions, I see that, you know, integrating funds work very smoothly and well for a lot of couples.
One of the things that we haven't touched on yet is the idea that the person who makes more may feel a sense of entitlement to be able to make more decisions or to have more weight. You know, my vote counts for two since I make more, kind of thing. Did you find any evidence for that with all the women that you talked to in the research?
Yeah, we actually found, you know, research that has been done prior to ours showed that regardless of whether a man made more or less, he felt more empowered around making financial decisions, which is interesting bit of research. The research we did that we just did months ago, though, found that women who do make more feel like they are much more responsible for managing the household finances than women who make less. So in terms of, you know, paying bills, monitoring spending, budgeting, even making investment decisions, over half the women who are making more feel like they are making those decisions in a much more collaborative way, if not being in charge of it.
And what about, just very briefly, because we've got callers stacking up and we want to be able to get to them, what about the idea of who makes those investments for retirement and actually plans out the retirement?
Yeah, for planning for retirement, women who make more do a lot more of that and put a lot more energy into that. And maybe perhaps their partner's making more room for it. Perhaps they're feeling more empowered. We're not exactly sure why that's happening. But to me, that's a really great thing, because one of the problems that women have had historically, and couples in general, men also, is not paying enough attention to retirement. And we talked about this, Beth Ann, in previous shows, where society has changed. You can't count on that pension. You can't necessarily count on Social Security. So if you're going to want to make sure that your family's okay, you're okay, you're really going to have to pay attention to planning for your own retirement.
Added to the fact, out of which there's the fact that women live longer and are going to have to know something about what's happening with their own retirement, most likely.
Well, absolutely. And if you look at even divorce rates, I mean, the chances are statistically a woman's going to, you know, be alive 7 to 10 years longer than her spouse. Statistically, there's a even chance that she'll end up divorced if she is putting all that power into her husband's hands and lacking the knowledge on, you know, where accounts are, how to access them, what's happening. I mean, women are especially vulnerable to poverty, and some researchers have called it the feminization of poverty, not just in America, but across the world. Women are much more likely to be in a position, especially minority women, to take care of aging parents and to be suffer or enduring that expense also out of their sense of value of connectedness. So women are in a much more vulnerable position even today, even with all the changes we've seen in terms of finances. So it's more important than ever for them to feel empowered and to be making those decisions and at least feeling an equal partner partnership in their relationship.
All right, let's talk to a few more callers. If you'd like to be next caller, call us sooner rather than later, 941-3689. If you're on Oahu, use that number, 941-3689, or from the neighbor islands or someplace else if you're listening to the live stream, 877-941-3689. Going to Lindsay calling us from the Big Island. Aloha, Lindsay. Thanks for your patience.
Hi. So I currently out-earn my husband, but it's been fairly new for us since I've been able to do so, probably within the last 3 years of a 14-year relationship. And I can say we've been together for 15 years. We're young parents, early 30s, and I just started earning more about 3 years ago. But now that we are parents, our money is in a big pot, and we basically divvy up the expenses. Now that I make more money, I actually contribute more to the childcare, but that's more of a team effort. And so, you know, our arguments don't really surround money at all, really.
Lindsay, who pays the bills?
I do the bills, but I've always done the bills. And that's because it's a strength of mine. I'm better at it.
You're just good at it.
Right.
I'm good at it, and he really doesn't care about it too much. And he trusts me with his paycheck. He basically hands the paycheck over to me. Everything gets paid. He gets the money, you know, he can check the accounts. I'm pretty stringent about a budget, and the paycheck is attached to the budget every 2 weeks. So he knows where the money goes, and he trusts me with it. And so it's not a real big deal, but I think that a lot of the issues, you know, about security and such, I think that marriage is teamwork. And at the end of the day, if it's a common goal, you know, striving to make sure that you're paying your bills on time and kind of like, supporting the other partner's ambitions, then there shouldn't really be too much of an argument. I mean, we don't talk about the money situation. He's very aware of it. But at the end of the month, we're broke anyway, so it doesn't matter if I'm making more.
But you're broke and happy, Lindsay. Thanks so much, very much, for the call, and we wish you continued success. Going now to Sue calling us from Maui. Aloha, Sue.
Aloha. Very interesting program. Thank you for bringing this up. I'm glad to know I'm not the only one in this situation, being the breadwinner of the family, which happens to be just the two of us. We don't have any kids. So that kind of, you know, changes some of our dynamics as well. But interesting, the gentleman commenting earlier, I was raised thinking that I would get married, have kids, stay home, raise the kids, and live the happy white picket fence, and it didn't work out for me. Which is okay. Got married late in life, and 5 years ago, as the economy crashed, my husband lost his job. And so interesting that, you know, life still goes on, and he's taken over the house and the cleaning and the laundry, which is a huge help, a complete change of role reversal than what I thought I was ever going to have.
But you've obviously been able to do it well. You're still together, and it sounds like you're still making it work.
Yep, we are. It's interesting. I never really realized how fragile the male ego was. But, you know, it's like, come home and I get report, oh, I did the laundry, I did the floors, I did the bathroom. I'm like,
and you say, good boy, you did such a great job, dear. Thank you.
Thank you. Like, when you were working, I was working and doing all of that.
So, all right. I'm going to stop you right there because I'm watching Dr. Johnson's head nod a little bit. This need for having appreciation for specific tasks well done.
This is I hear this all the time, and I'm glad Sue brought this up. And women are like, suffer that frustration all the time because they will have done 15 things, you know, in the cleanup for dinner, and the guy didn't do anything except, you know, flip off the TV and eventually take out the trash. He comes back in and goes, honey, I took out the trash. And she thinks, what's he want, a medal? You know, but guys are very task-oriented. If you watch men interact with each other, they're all about high fives, that, yeah, got it, okay, cool, I got this, I got that, right? So they're very task-oriented. It's not a big deal. They don't need you to look deeply in their eyes and go, honey, I so appreciate you for taking out the... No, they're just like, okay, cool, thanks, that's it. And guys are very, very task-oriented, much more so than women, and they want to just be appreciated for the task.
And that's simple enough to do. You know, and most people don't hear thank you enough anyway.
Yes, but you know, but most women, you know, they appreciate thank you, that's fine, and thank you's good, but they don't want to report out every single task they complete and get a thank you for it. They're really more into the whole process of it and the appreciation of the experience and how people are getting along and how people are feeling in it and the feeling tone. And
But going back to your point about, you know, if your husband does something like that, instead of just sort of like, oh, well, I've did all this other stuff, and he just to be able to say, hey, thanks, honey, appreciate it.
Yeah.
Men, it's a simple enough thing to do.
Men need more task appreciation and acknowledgement than women, generally speaking. Some people are different, but generally speaking. And so, yeah, when you have men doing the housework, they will report out, yeah, I got the laundry done. Yeah, I got that. Yeah, exactly like Sue was saying. And women oftentimes don't get that or don't understand that. All they want is a smile. I like it. Great. Thanks. And just keep moving it on. Right.
All
and
right,
then
well,
the guy will be happy and motivated to keep going.
Well, we're going to keep moving on, and we're going to talk to a guy. Ross is calling us from Honolulu. Aloha, Ross.
Hi. Great conversation. I have a question, and maybe hopefully I can add a different perspective. I'm gay. I've been in a relationship with the same person for just over 5 years now. There is a disparity in incomes. He's what I guess you would refer to as a starving college student, and I'm currently employed. So we have experienced this disparity of income. Question to your guest is maybe if they do they know of any research that doesn't specifically look at gender, but just that disparity of...
Okay, good question, Ross, and I'm sorry we're going to cut you off a little bit, but we're having a hard time with your line, too. I don't know what's going on tonight, but we will carry on. Brad, anything that you can add for our caller, Ross, that's not necessarily gender-specific in terms of who's making more and how that affects the relationship?
You know, first of all, I should congratulate Ross because gay men have actually some of the best financial health of any pairing. And, you know, it's sort of unfortunate in the sense that it's partially because society is continuing to pay men more than women.
Yeah, because,
you know,
they're,
because
they're guys. They've got a little bit of a break because they're guys.
Right, they do. And also, and very often they aren't rearing children. Some are, of course, but that actually, you know, one of the damaging things to your financial health is to have a child in terms of how much money you have and how much money you're going to be spending. So in general, gay men couples tend to have better financial health. And in our research, actually, we didn't look at sexuality in that sense. But one of the things I did look at is how much somebody associates with, you know, gender stereotyped roles. And we didn't really see an effect in terms of, for the women in our group, ones who had, you know, more masculine, if you will, sort of traits or ambitions versus more traditional feminine, we didn't really see that play out, which told me it had less to do with that individual psychology around the gender and more with what society tells us we should be doing and are responding to that. So, you know, sorry for Ross, I don't have anything specific other than what I just shared.
All right. Well, that's a little bit more than maybe he had coming into the conversation.
I guess one thing I can add for Ross is, independent of gender, a construct that can be very useful in couples is this concept of what I call leapfrog. My wife and I have done this in our marriage as well. Each one has out-earned the other at various times. She supported me when I went to graduate school. I supported her getting a business off the ground. And so in any couple, when you know, because Ross mentioned his partner is in college and a poor college student. So right now, obviously, Ross is, sort of carrying the load and supporting his partner, which is certainly admirable. And so this concept that, you know, not in a couple – you can't both be necessarily always pursuing your first priority, right? There's always some degree of compromise. And so, you know, one way is to just constantly be compromising, but the other is to go, no, go for it. Go get that degree. Go do the retraining. Go write your book. Go whatever that is. I'll hold the bag. I'll hold it together financially while you do that. And then after you do that, then maybe I want to do something, right? And so this idea that marriage and committed relationship is a series of a game of leapfrog where we take turns supporting each other as we each move forward and then the couple moves forward, it builds a tremendous amount of commitment. And it also is sort of helpful when we're the one who's sort of holding the bag and holding it together while the other partner is you know, kind of living their dream for a while.
That does presume, though, that you have both an income that would allow you to let the other one leapfrog.
Yes, it does. And, you know, the other thing, jumping back a few callers to, I think it was Lindsay, talked about several things that are really key in any relationship, which is she talked about they trust each other. They talk about it's teamwork. And they talked about sort of within the role of the relationship, doing what they're good at instead of whatever the gender expectation is. She's good at paying bills. She's good at minding the budget. Great. Let her do it. You know, in other relationships, it may be, you know, it's one partner or the other. But do what you're good at. There has to be trust and there has to be a commitment to the team.
All right. Let's find out what Ruth calling us from the Big Island has to say. Aloha, Ruth. Welcome to Town Square.
Thanks. I just wanted to chime in. Years ago, the syndicated columnist Ellen Goodman, who wrote, I read her in the Washington Post, but she wrote an article called When Grateful Begins to Grate, and it was talking about how women sometimes can get tired of being grateful to their husbands for things that, you know, like picking the kids up from soccer or going by the grocery store. And she was just saying, you know, gosh, that's part of a partnership. And what's interesting, she wrote for many, many years, and she said that she got more response on that column than from anything she'd written. And it was from husbands writing back, you know, saying, you know, I do a lot. So it was along the same lines of the tension between, you know, the expectations of a shared life together, and also just in general being grateful to each other for what you do. So
Ruth, I'm glad you called with that one, because it kind of goes back to that same idea that we do need to feel a sense of thanks and gratitude for what's being done, but it can't be nickel and dimed.
Well, and I guess the piece is, you know, there's several books out on different languages of love, et cetera, et cetera. But I think it's very important to understand your partner, and the golden rule kills a lot of relationships. The golden rule is treat others the way you want to be treated. And so we treat our spouse or our partner the way we want to be appreciated. We appreciate them that way.
Which may have nothing to do with what they need.
Exactly. And that's, you know, oftentimes in gender, men need this little task appreciation. It doesn't need to be the deep, meaningful conversation and deep feeling, where women need much more of the sort of emotional appreciation for who they are and how they view the world and how they are in the world. The guys are like, if you look deeply into your husband's eyes and go, sweetheart, I just love the way you are as a person. And he's going to go, what's wrong? You know, what's the problem here, right? He just wants the high five, the kiss on the cheek, the thanks, dude. You know, really appreciate you picking up the kids this weekend.
All right, well, thanks, dude, for that one. Okay. We're going to go take a call from Lisa calling us from Honolulu. Aloha, Lisa.
Hi, I just wanted to say that as a woman who makes more than her husband, you know, it's not been a problem for us. And I really, really dislike the way the doctor said that women feel guilty about making more money than their husbands. It is so expensive to live in Hawaii that we're all doing our best to just get by. And I work in a male-dominated industry, and I have a really hard time with pay discrimination. And just even anybody saying, oh, women feel guilty for making more than their husbands, that's awful. It's horrible to say. And it just perpetuates this idea that, oh, women should get paid less for it, even though they work just equally as hard as men do.
I don't think that's what's being said. And Brad, jump back into this conversation a little bit.
Yeah,
here, because
Lisa, I agree. And really what our research found is that this is what the women were reporting. And I think the important part of that is to step back, just as you're doing, Lisa, and say, hey, that's wrong. It shouldn't be that way. And it shouldn't be that way. And I think that it gives us pause to look back at what sort of messages are we giving girls and women around, you know, what they should be doing, or men, what they should be doing, and how much of that really applies, how much of it's helpful. Like Dr. Johnson said, I think the needs will always be there, but the roles should be changed, should be flexible. And I think that's a healthy couple is one where the roles can be very flexible. The needs probably won't change, though.
Lisa, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
And glad we got some clarification on that one. Obviously, this is all still in progress, and it's going to be a work in progress probably for decades. Martin Johnson, you said earlier in the conversation that you thought that we're not necessarily in just the the end of the transition, but we're more like in the beginning of the transition, despite whatever our feminist mothers might have believed they were doing in the 70s and even into the 80s.
You know, from everything I read, the educational disparity is increasing and accelerating. In other words, women in the United States are becoming more educated than men. I'm not sure I understand exactly why that is, but it is what's happening. And along with that, I think we're going to see increasingly couples where the woman earns more, or that, you know, it's just going to be all over the map, and that's going to be the new norm. I think in the last couple of generations, you know, women's roles have expanded. The downside of the good side of that is women have more choice, and that's a great thing for society. The downside is the myth that some people have talked about of the woman who wants to have everything all at the same time, and that's just that means she just gets overloaded, right? So I think there's more flexibility in how we can be as couples. You know, the thing I talk about a lot on loveinsight.com is, and that's all fine, but, you know, men are still men and women are still women, and there are differences in that. And by understanding that and respecting that and working with that, that has nothing to do necessarily with what roles we play, but just sort of how we are as people. And when we understand that and keep that in mind, the relationship tends to work better.
Brad Klontz, I want to ask you about what Dr. Johnson just said in the context of the fact that we've had this huge disparity between what men and women make in the very same jobs for decades and decades and decades. I mean, going back, you know, 50 years that we've got research on this specifically, and that we still have research that shows that a woman in the same job is making anywhere between maybe 20 or 25 cents less per dollar than a man does. As women are earning more, that doesn't necessarily mean that they are making as much as men are making in the very same job. How do we bring that up with the rest of some of what we're seeing in the research?
Well, you know, I think that the trend is very positive, as you've said, but that's no reason for us to rest on our laurels, because it's still a very, very big problem. And I want to go back to some of what Farnoosh was saying. You know, society has to change, and sometimes it has to be done with legislation, you know, in terms of putting value on, and I'm a new parent. My son's turning one in a couple of weeks, and I just have a whole new perspective from this side, just looking at how important it would have been great for me to have some more paternity leave and for our society to value that. And I think the more that we're doing that, the more we're valuing what women have traditionally been put in those roles, I think that the more that we do that as a society, the better it'll be for everybody.
At what point, and I know you heard me ask this of Farnoosh too, at what point do you think that we're not going to be talking about this anymore and really looking at it as being an issue?
Well, I think, you know, from what Dr. Johnson's talking about in terms of the love languages, we probably always will be talking about that. But I really do hope within the next decade or two that we're going to see that we're on a much more even playing field, because I do think it all comes down to what messages we're teaching our children, because our children will eventually be in our position. They'll be the ones writing the laws. They'll be the ones making the decisions. So as we can educate our youth around what roles they, you know, flexibility and being whoever you want, and it's okay to make more or less, and we need to treat everyone fairly, the more that we can give them specific messages around money that are going to service in that direction, telling women you have to take care of yourself, you know, Let's learn these skills early on, versus what we've been telling girls historically, well, don't worry about it. You'll get married. You don't have to worry about the money. So the more that we do that and give people the adequate education, the correct education, the better we'll be.
And to do that all the while knowing that you may have to part some serious company with some of your friends and relatives who are not on that same page, and that has to be okay too.
Absolutely. We have to be able to hold on to our values in the face of people judging us or telling us, you know, giving us messages like, well, you know, it's not right that you're making more than your husband. And we have to just sort of ignore that, take our kids aside and say, hey, look, they got it wrong. It's really okay.
All right. Well, thanks so much for joining us again tonight. Always a pleasure having conversations about our relationship with our money with you. Thanks very much for joining us, Dr. Brad Klontz.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And to you, Dr. Martin Johnson, thanks as always for coming in and giving us the real deal with what you are seeing with couples and how that can be made a little bit better as we are in this transitionary period, which, as you say, we may just be starting. Thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
I will see you tomorrow morning right back here at 8 o'clock for The Conversation. In the meantime, have yourselves a good evening. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. Aloha.